Mama used to say that sinful things happen before light comes back in the sky. That's how ignorant, how country she was. She believed that when light isn't there to keep people careful, they do what they wouldn't ordinarily do. She lived by these warnings, too, because I never saw her out at night, except church on Sunday and Wednesday nights. And if Kobe and I weren't with her then, she always asked old Henry to walk her home. Every morning I wake up early enough to run while it's still dark, and sometimes I remember how Mama used to warn us about nighttime evil. One time Kobe ran home chased by three boys. One of them, a rough boy named Roger Box, threatened to cut my brother because he tried to ease his way on Roger's girl. Kobe took off his white t-shirt and stuffed it into his briefs so that he could slip into the darkness. I was reading in the front room, and Mama was sitting next to me, falling asleep and waking every other moment because she was too tired to get up and climb into bed, when Kobe knocked on the door. We looked at the bulge in front of him. Since he found his way home safely, it all seemed funny to him. He laughed as he told us about the three boys chasing him, and he made sure not to mention the girl until after Mama had gone to bed. But before Mama got up from the chair, the tiredness seemed to have faded from her, and she shook her head at Kobe. "That's why me warn you boy walk the street at night," she said. "But you don't want for listen to nothing me say." Then she closed her bedroom door. Back then, Kobe and I looked forward to the time of night when Mama retired to her room. The front room, where we slept and ate and did our living, became a playground, a confessional, and reprieve in that two-room house after she went to bed. I cut one of the limes Anne Marie picks from the tree behind our house, and I squeeze half of it into a cup, adding brown sugar and cold water from the fridge. Only a little sweet drink can wake me up and keep my body light enough to run. A long time ago, I watched a race on the television where a black man, much blacker than me, beat a whole bunch of white people, and he smiled into the camera, and his teeth were like sunlight forcing my eyes closed. That's how bright his teeth shone with skin that black. He pointed up to God, maybe to say, "You was the one who made these legs to work so fast." I started running after that. Don't know why. It just felt like something a powerful type of man should do. This was back when I had just come from the country to attend university. I didn't know anybody and didn't know how to know anybody. The world closes up for a quiet man. I started running when it was dark because I was ashamed for anyone to see my stick legs doing anything beyond walking. Anne Marie says, "I'm greedy for such a small man." What she doesn't understand is that I'm eating more than enough so that I don't become an even smaller man because of all the running I do. I touch my toes and then I stretch each leg on one of the low branches of the mango tree in our front yard. I start out slow, feeling the last of my sleep slip off, and eventually my legs feel stronger and then I'm gaining speed. I always loop around our housing scheme, admiring the gleam of new houses built on what used to be bush. A few of the houses are still empty. They all tend to be larger than ours, with more expansive lawns. We wanted something more modest, with trees mature enough to produce fruit, the only house in the scheme that hadn't been built brand new. I wanted to live in a house where Mama could visit and feel comfortable. She liked nice things, but she was born and would die a country woman, so she was easily overwhelmed. When she lived with us, she looked around at the neighbors' houses and asked, "So what? People with money want them house feel come white?" In the country, we never knew a white house. People who didn't have the money left their houses the color of the cement blocks, while others painted their walls the color of dirt or leaves or the sky, anything but white. If people who know me could hear all the talk going on in my head while I run, they would be surprised. because not only am I quiet, but I'm also simple. Everything about me is quiet and simple, from the clothes I put on to the ordinary way I talk that doesn't bring attention for being an educated man, to the unfussy way I gratefully eat everything that Anne-Marie puts in front of me. It's a combination that continues to surprise people when they hear how well I've done for myself. When they see the woman I'm with, they take a good look at her light skin and tall hair, and they wonder how a McGaw footman could get a woman like that. They don't realize I can see the surprise in their faces as they look from Anne-Marie to me. They wouldn't guess that my demeanor is what caught Anne-Marie's eyes at UWI. Her father, a louder, bigger man, used to beat her mother, so I believe she took my quiet ways to mean I would treat her good. And I have. I knew cockier, more talkative men were looking her way, and because I didn't think she would consider me, I didn't think anything when she created opportunities to talk to me. One day she asked if I wanted a piece of coconut drops she was eating in the last moments before our human resources class began. I looked past her to Devon Taylor, the handsomest boy in our class, whose people had money because his father was somehow involved in Parliament. Devon Taylor was looking at Anne-Marie. She was looking at me. And in that moment, I considered how often she offered food to me, and the time she bumped into me studying at my usual spot in the library. It didn't make sense. But I put two and two together. It bothered me that my nature, which had caused people to misuse and ignore me all my life, especially in comparison to Kobe's, could catch a woman's attention because of the safety of being loved by a man like me. I started meeting Anne-Marie's interest with my own.